Welcome. It is now 1:59 and counting. And we don't have a name for this show, but we do have a date. August 24th, 2007. The year of our Lord. 007 with a 2 in front of it. Now that last thing we just heard, I wanted to talk about just a little bit. It's called Fight the Power by Public Enemy. And you may remember that song from 1989. And all the police dances to the song in that little midgety niglet Spike Lee's film Do the Right Thing, which was mocked in one of our better animated cartoons. Is that's as believable as the Italian dialogue in a Spike Lee movie, which is funny. It's funny. But that little nigger with the giant clock around his neck is still out there. That's Flavor Flav, who's roasted on Comedy Central and has reality shows and these other. And Flavor Flav is about as, he's niggery for even a nigger. Let's put it that way. But point here is that you have corporate production of music, rap, hip-hop, whatever you want to call it, that's encouraging blacks to feel aggrieved and put upon. And let's see. Before I get further in, I want to talk a little bit about what we're going to do today. And let's see here. All right. Checking my sound levels a little bit here. Try to keep it about the same. There's only really, for those of you who might like to get into this and do it with us, it's not particularly all that hard. It's very easy to get on. It's once you learn how to manipulate a couple of dials, you can get it going. Now, I've assembled a long playlist here. What I did today was start off at about 1:40 and just run some stuff. So I'm telling that my voice is coming in about the right level right now. Now, what we're going to do today is run from 2 to 4. And what I'm going to discuss will be violence. Talk about violence. Now, I'm also going to talk about newspapers and publishing. I'm going to talk about what's productive activity in white nationalism. I'm going to talk about the telecult. And then I may get back and do a little political correctness. And that fact that may occupy again, as it has, the bulk of the show. When I said we concluded yesterday, that was actually chapter 3 of 4 chapters. So there's another final chapter, chapter 4 of Marxism, Multiculturalism, and Free Speech by Frank Ellis, formerly of Leeds University. And this chapter 4 is called From Communism's Enemy of the People to PC's Hate Criminal. And there's some stuff to talk about in there also. And that's and once we're done talking about that on future shows next week, although I may have to be out of town for a couple of days, we will discuss his analysis of some Britain-specific political correctness, including a report written by some Duga there. And I think that'll be of interest to the British listeners that we have. And we have Aryan Matters with James Hawthorne that discusses these matters in Britain. We also are big fans of, and in a way, distant allies of, Simon Shepherd and Luke O'Farrell of Heretical.com. And I encourage you to go over there and read through O'Farrell's archive and also the assembled library that Simon Shepherd has put together. If you're in Britain, I encourage you to support them in their legal fight to reestablish some sort of freedom of criticism of the powers that be that we just heard the Niggies saying that they were going to fight. Well, let me tell you, getting back to that, the powers that be are the niggers. And this is part of the misery of a Jew-produced society. The people who are actually on top continue to pretend that they're on the bottom as they fight off the rump, disappearing, insulted, hated class that is the white male. And we'll, that of course, folds right back into Chapter 4 of Ellis's work, because the white male is the figure of hate. And like I said yesterday, I'll keep repeating it because it's great. The only ad on TV in which the white male is treated with respect is the Army ad. And it's funny, there's a poem actually by, I think, Rudyard Kipling, and it's, you know, the gist of it is exactly that. They treat with great disrespect the working class Brits until it's time for someone to go abroad and fight for them, and then it's right this way, Tommy Atkins, standing for the average British soldier. And that's how it is here. They have no use for you white males. They discriminate against you in jobs and employment. The only time they show you any respect is when you're supposed to go abroad and die for them. And they really don't show you any respect because you're not dying to help America. That's just what they tell you. What you're doing is dying to defend Israel. Whatever Israel currently perceives is in its interest is what the U.S. Army does. Okay? And why don't we take a little excursus here, and we'll journey over to Kirksville today, which is my local blog, Kirksville being a town of 17,000 in northeastern Missouri, and the home of Truman State University. And I spend a good portion of my time on the blog. To the extent I deal with national or non-local matters, and local blogs should deal primarily with local matters, to the extent I deal with national and global matters, I deal with disencouraging people to join the military. Let's put it that way. And what we have is an excellent column by a former system tool who's become something of an opponent. He still retains the vestiges of cowardice that are the characteristics of the paleocon, but he's become radicalized, not at least due to our pressure from people he knows are telling the truth and who have more guts than him, but at least he has proved one of the rare men who's somewhat willing to be able to be shamed into living up to a standard. And his shame at not telling his readers the full truth has led him in that direction, to where today he comes pretty close to telling the full truth. The only part I would still quibble with Paul Craig Roberts and his work is that he consistently calls Jews Nazis, calls Republicans Nazis. Well, sir or girl, depending on how you act, the difference between the Nazis and the Paul Craig Roberts is that the Nazis stood up to the neocons of their time and knocked them on their ass. They didn't go around calling Jews Scotsmen or Welsh or Irish or Amish or any other off-target name. They called them precisely what they were. They called them Jews and Bolsheviks, and they said Judeo-Bolshevismus. Now, Roberts' recent column is called No American President Can Stand Up to Israel. And he says, those words came from the feisty Admiral Thomas Moore, Chief of Naval Operations, 1967 to 1970, and Chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, 70 to 74. So this guy was one of the top-level Army guys back in the late 60s and early mid-70s. And Roberts says, and Roberts worked in the Reagan administration, Moore was perhaps Moorer. He's written about in the book, which I have behind me, in the third edition, They Dare to Speak Out, by former Congressman Paul Finley. He's one of the guys who talks about this, and think about that. Think about it. Here you've got a top military guy under Nixon saying, no American president can stand up to Israel. And possibly at the exact same time he was saying those words in the Oval Office, Richard Nixon, the president, was meeting with Billy Graham, the head of basically the Protestant Pope. Both of them were talking about Jews dominating the media. And one of them said, they've got a stranglehold on it, but we must never say that in public. So when I say that Jews control the U.S., that's what I'm referring to. I'm talking about the president, the Protestant Pope, and the head of the military all agreeing that we can't do anything that opposes Israel, and we can't talk about the Jews controlling the press. Think about that. Three of the most powerful, most respected people in the country feel that they cannot discuss Jewish interest and Jewish behavior honestly and openly. Why? Because the Jews have such a powerful network that they will smear and destroy the careers of these men, if not assassinate them outright. That's how bad it was in 1970 goddamn four. What year is it now? What did I start the show? It's 2007. 33 years later. Do you suppose it's better? No, it's actually worse. And that explains why we have a war in Iraq. Why we attacked a country that did nothing to us. Our country is controlled by Jews through the power of the purse. Jews are the major donor to both parties. And through the power of the press. Jews own the mass media. There are very few non-Jews who own any mass media. Jews are the bulk of the top editors. They are the agenda setters. They are the party line deciders. And they are the ones who can make a figure of fun, a figure of hate, a figure of ridicule of anybody they want for any reason. They are the agenda pushers. As Pierce used to say, there's no one as lockstep as the crud turned and churned out by journalism schools. These are the most lemmingest people you will ever come across. And they're the ones who are supposedly reporting the news. You would think it would be a disqualification to be a news reporter, which is some version of a storyteller, if you're not open to anything new. Yet that's precisely the case. That's why people like Hunter S. Thompson, who actually had a little something to say, that's why they blow their heads off. They get sick of living in a cruddy world where everything is triply priced and you can't tell the truth about anything. Now, let me just read a bit more of this column because it concerns the liberty. Some of you may not know what the liberty is. We're certainly the goal of this show, which we're thinking up a good name for. Maybe we'll call it Qua Confidential. The hidden secrets of Ameriqua. Ameriqua being the country that Jews have produced, the society Jews have produced. Even that's an upgrade for the proper term for this melange of nasty people from the sewers of the earth. Qua Confidential or Air Ameriqua, who knows? And a lot of days we'll take calls, but I don't feel like messing with the technics today. I just want to talk and run a little music. Now, let's read a little of the Paul Craig. Admiral Moore knew what he was talking about. On June 8, 1967, Israel attacked the American intelligence ship USS Liberty, killing 34 American sailors and wounding 173. Wow. That's Israel murdering American sailors. Israel murdering American sailors. The Israelis even strafed the life rafts, machine-gunning the American sailors leaving the ship. Again, that's Israelis murdering Americans. Israelis murdering Americans. Israelis murdering Americans. You ever hear that little panty-waist Sean Hannity talk about that on Fox News? You ever hear that Femme O'Reilly talk about that on Fox News? You ever hear George Will talk about that? George, the famously the lapdog Will, talk about it? You ever hear Calpurnia
Rogers, I've forgotten. No, Calpurnia Thomas talk about that, the little fag with the bow tie, the tall fag with the bow tie. You ever hear him talk about that? Hell no. Hell no, you don't. These guys are laptops. Being Christians with little to no self-respect, they're willing to go along with cover-ups. They think Israel's our great ally. They don't care if Israel kills their own sons and daughters, murders them openly. They cover it up. Robert says apparently the USS Liberty had picked up Israeli communications that revealed Israel's responsibility for the Six-Day War. Even today, history books and the majority of Americans blame the conflict on the Arabs. And this is a common theme running through Jew-produced history. Jews are always the good guys. Not some of the time, most of the time, always the good guys. And anyone who opposed the Jews, the bad guy. So that even if you have 2,000 years of people complaining about the Jews for exactly the same reason, why, that's a reflection on them rather than on the Jews. Let me check and see if we have any questions right now. Hoping that I'm coming in. No questions. And let me remind you again that I'm going to be on until 4 p.m. this afternoon. And Bud White will be on tonight at 9, and maybe starting music earlier. And as a general practice, since playlists are easy to put together, I'll be running stuff for anywhere from 15 minutes to an hour before I come on, and just letting it run through the songs. And if you have any questions about the songs, I'll tell you who they are. But let's see. Let's get back and let's finish up with Roberts. And again, this is Paul Craig Roberts writing about the Jewish-Israeli attack on the USS Liberty in 1967, which resulted in 34 dead Americans and a couple hundred wounded. Deliberate mass murder of Americans by Jews, covered up by LBJ. Some ally, huh? Some ally. These are the people who are murdering our people. We feed them $20 million a day that we know about. And of course, there are huge areas of the defense and intelligence budgets that are not known about. They're black areas. We don't know what they spend the money on. Well, you can well believe that the people who run the government are seeing that a fair share of that black money goes to Israel. Says Roberts, the United States Navy knew the truth, but the President of the United States took Israel's side against the American military and ordered the United States Navy to shut its mouth. Wow. Wow. Later in life, Admiral Moore formed a commission and presented the unvarnished truth to Americans. And the links in this article and Paul Craig Roberts' stuff is available around the net, but go to Kirksville today, Kirksville today.com. And you find the article with the links included, the links to the commission Moore set up to discuss the Jewish murder of Americans. So you see, when people talk about Jewish loyalty, they say, oh, they're dual loyal. They're loyal to our country and Israel. But this is a mistake. They are loyal only to their own kind. And they are loyal only to Israel. They are not loyal to the United States in any way, shape, or form whatsoever. Jews care only about what is good for Jews. You'll even see people in the mainstream, comedians and such, laugh about, oh, grandma always said, well, is this, what is, and if something would happen, she'd say, oh, is this good for Jews? What does this mean for Jews? That's all they care about. And this is presented as quaint and kind of funny. They're very persecuted and oppressed people, forced to occupy the most expensive real estate in the middle of our major towns, forced to loan money at very, very high interest rates. They didn't want to. God knows they wanted to farm carrots and dusty beets and potatoes. That's what they wanted to do, but you vicious, hate-filled Christians wouldn't allow them to do that. They were forced to loan money at very high interest rates. How can we make it up to this poor, persecuted people? I think we ought to believe everything they say and never doubt them and throw anyone in jail who disagrees with anything they say. Or should we fight the powers that be? Now let's see. Says Roberts, the power of the Israel lobby over American foreign policy is considerable. In March 2006, two distinguished American scholars, John Mearsheimer and Stephen Walt, expressed concern in the London Review of Books that the power of the Israel lobby was bending U.S. foreign policy in directions that serve neither U.S. nor Israeli interests. The two experts were hoping to start a debate that might rescue the U.S. and Israel from unsuccessful policies of coercion that are intensifying Muslim hatred of Israel and America. The Israel lobby was opposed to any such reassessment and attempted to close it off with epithets, Jew-baiter, anti-Semitic, and even anti-American. Today, Israeli citizens who oppose Zionist plans for greater Israel are denounced as anti-Semites. See, the neat thing about Jews taking over America in the 60s, if you want to pin a date on it, is that now they can call their critics anti-Americans, as well as the traditional anti-Semites. That's why we coined the term Ameriqua to describe the quasi, the jungle-like nature of whatever this thing is, this giant mess that the Jews have produced since they took control. Says Roberts, many Americans are unaware of the influence of the Israel lobby. Instead, they think of the U.S. as, quote, the world's sole superpower, a macho new Roman Empire whose orders are obeyed without question, or the insolent non-entity is, quote, bombed back to the Stone Age. Many Americans are convinced that military coercion serves our interest. They cite Libya, Serbia, Afghanistan, Iraq, and now they're ready to bring Iran and Pakistan to heel with bombs. This arrogance results in the murder of tens of thousands, perhaps hundreds of thousands, of men, women, and children, a fate that many Americans seem to believe is appropriate for countries that do not accept U.S. hegemony, or hegemony. I always hated that word. It's a big international relations word. It doesn't mean all that much. It just means domination. Coercion is what American foreign policy has become. Macho super patriots, these are the patriotards, the free republic types, the low IQ, flag waving morons. Love it. Many of these super patriots derive vicarious pleasure from their delusions that America is, we're kicking those sand niggers' asses, yeah. This is the America of the Bush regime. If some of those super patriots had their way, every unpatriotic terrorist supporter who dares to criticize the war against the Islamofascists would be sent to Gitmo, if not shot on the spot. And then here's the part I don't like. The Bush supporters have morphed the Republican Party into the brown shirt party. But lying and killing people is not what the Nazis did. It's what the Jews do. The Nazis fought the people who were the then equivalent of the neocons, which might as well be neocoms. Remember, Churchill says the driving power behind communism is the Jews. And this American version of communism, where you go along with the government or you get shut out of existence. Here they're called neocons, as though there's anything. There's nothing conservative about attacking other countries for no reason. That's the opposite of conservatism. Attempting to remake the world out of your own head is utopian rationalist, to the extent that's your real aim. Or it's overt blood and soil communism, where there is a rational aim, like just getting rid of Saddam Hussein, which may be the real intention of the war, in which case it's successful. I mean, it's not Jews coming up with the $2 trillion that the war is estimated to end up costing. $2 trillion. I didn't say billion. I didn't say million. I said trillion. $2 trillion. They're saying it's going to cost $2 trillion to prosecute this war. It's not coming from the pockets of Jews. It's coming out of your pockets. Your blood and treasure serving Israel. Is the entertainment value of this war really high enough that you're enjoying it? That you want to pay for it to that level? Because you're gonna. And he goes on to thwap the Democrats. The Democrats could easily impeach both Bush and Cheney in the House, as impeachment only requires a majority vote. They could not convict in the Senate without Republican support, because that requires two-thirds. Nevertheless, a House vote for impeachment would take the wind out of the sails of war, save countless lives, and perhaps even save humanity from nuclear holocaust. And think about this. You've got someone who's not very smart. He's certainly not smart enough to be a functional president. That's Bush. He's kind of a dumb, anti-intellectual, I hate books type person. He's the kind of guy who would like ask you, do you like reading books? And then when you said yes, he would go, that's cool, I really do too, but he would really think you're a big pussy because you like reading. They say in the New Simpsons, I was elected to lead. They have a Schwarzenegger character playing the president, and that's his comment. I was not elected to read, I was elected to lead. And that's kind of the anti-intellectual dumbism of Bush. But behind him, of course, are plenty of very high IQ people. One of them's Cheney. He's got a bad heart. What has he got to lose? These people have nothing to lose. Nothing to lose. Remember, they don't believe in any kind of an afterworld. They believe that all is here and now, and get it while you can. They have very little to constrain what they do, short of fear or being voted out of office. Cheney could die at any day. What does he care? He's going to make himself rich. He's going to bomb all these countries. They found a nice working alliance between the oil people and the organized Jews. Bomb these countries. Steal a few hundred billion from you to supposedly rebuild them. Build giant bases. War is the health of the state. War is the health of the military. It sucks money from you and gives it to them. It sucks powers from you and gives it to them. Today there's virtually nothing that can be decided at a local level. It's all decided out of Washington by a bunch of Jews. Whether it's education, defense, what have you. And none of those policies are devised with your interests in mind. The white way of organizing things is decentralization. Because, and Sobern has an excellent article that appeared, Rockwell linked to it today, and I'll link to it next feed. He's talking about Nixon. He says, you know, he met him, and Nixon seemed not at all like he was portrayed in the press. But nevertheless, the fact that Nixon had been the most powerful man in the world, it just appeared to Sobern that you can't trust anyone with that kind of power. No one is fit to exercise that kind of power. They simply can't have the knowledge or the wisdom to make the decisions that their power allows them to. It's very frightening. And this is true of anyone. When you grow up, maybe some of you listening are young and you haven't met any famous people and you think, well, maybe there's a major difference between me and them. Now, there may be a major difference in terms of talent or something or whatever it is that got them to be famous, but in this sort of way, there is no fundamental difference. There's a difference of degree, not in kind, between you and the most famous or powerful person in the world. They're still pretty similar. In fact, I was reading a book of stories culled from some magazine. I'm not sure which one, but people are wacky. I mean, they were talking about some... This is what people do when they have power and no one can stop them. And one of the empresses of Russia, I forget which one, but she was angry at one of her courtiers. So she forced him to marry a really ugly serving wench, and had built a literal ice palace, and then had this courtier and the ugly broad she forced him to marry taken to that in a sleigh with all kinds of freaky dwarves and weird looking people, human flotsam and jetsam, and animals kind of in this train, and then forced them to bed down in this ice palace she'd had built. That's the kind of wacky shit people do when they have power and there's no constraints on them. And these are likely to be, you know, there's likely to be the head of the country is not. People with dangerous ideas, and that's why you want to try to limit the power of the people who have the executive office. You want to limit and disperse the power, and the best way to disperse power is in media, and this is something that's never been dealt with by the Constitution. The power that can be accumulated in media organs is something that the founders, the people who wrote the Constitution, obviously could not take into account because they didn't exist. You see, so if you want to talk about Sobern's fond of saying that the Constitution poses no threat to our way of government. which is true, and it's a nice witty line. But the fact is that the rise in the mass media has altered power relations between and among people and peoples in ways that the founders could not predict. So it truly is true that the Constitution doesn't really apply to the current circumstances in a very large regard. In some ways it still does. It understands what people are like and how they're tempted to abuse power, and it poses a decent thought out way of constraining people to try to do the best for what's best for the community. But there's this whole other area. If the mass media are more powerful than ever, and they're owned by a tiny minority of people that's hostile to the people they live among, the minority lives among, then surely any kind of political analysis of the situation has to take that into account. Our media equals television equals Jews equals what's good for Jews as the one and only agenda, with, you know, capitalist profits way down the line. You understand that? I don't think enough people understand that. I don't think enough conservatives understand that point. They act like it's a matter of bias in the media. And if they would just quit being biased liberals, it would clear up. Well, there's a lot more to it. That's like saying political correctness is a matter of forcing us all to be mannerly. No. It doesn't have anything to do with bias or manners. That's the communist mindset, following an agenda devised by the Jews who devised hell, communism itself, being forced on the rest of us, and them giving us as little freedom to escape as they can, and trying to shrink that freedom over time. But let's leave it there, and let me just wrap up the bit about Paul Craig Roberts and the USS Liberty by saying you can go to KirksvilleToday.com. You can find the article, and you can find the links if you want to know more about that horrible tragedy that was covered up by Lyndon Johnson. And the media went along with it. They barely reported it. And they pretended it was, it was an accident. It wasn't an accident. The ship was clearly marked. The Israelis were on the radio. They knew it was an American ship. They returned repeatedly and fired at it, and then they fired at the people as they were trying to get away. Their goal was to sink the thing and then just pretend that I think Egypt did it. That's how Jews are. All they care about is what's good for Jews. And Viktor Ostrovsky, the ex-Mossad operative, who's written a couple books by way of deception and the other side of deception, easily findable on Amazon or elsewhere, said that Americans believe, you know, it's a two-way street, Israel is our ally. He said, no, it's a one-way street. The Israelis certainly don't look at America as an ally. They look at us for whatever they can, what can we kikes do you for? We don't get anything coming the other way. It's all one-way street. It's a one-way flow of blood and treasure. The only thing we get from the Jews precisely what we get from mosquitoes. Either nothing or an infectious mite entering our bloodstream, passing the blood as the blood goes on the up escalator, the infected microbe is on the down one. That's what we get for allowing. When I say we, I always mean we white men get for allowing Jews to enter our country and treating them as individuals rather than what they are, a hostile team, a team of nation wreckers with a 2,000-year history of being absolute destructive scum. And I've proved to you that at the highest levels, the president, chief of staff, head of the Protestants, they know exactly what I'm talking about. They know that Jews are running the country, despite they may have the titles, but the Jews have the money and the power. So don't be fooled. Let's take a little track and let's listen to a couple of songs, and I'll be right back.
Well, bugger off, you bastards, bugger off. Bugger off, you bastards, bugger off. Hey, the herd the bloody swine who refused to leave the trough. He'll get no more this sweetness, so you bastards bugger off. Will you blend and flood the audience of my old time just passed? Now don't you all be letting that door hit you in the ass. You've been a splendid audience, but enough is enough. We take it very kindly if you'd all just bugger off. Bugger off, you bastards, bugger off.
Fuck you!
Bugger off,
you bastards, bugger off.
Fuck you! Take a herd of bloody swine who refuse to leave the trough. You'll get no more this evening, so you bastards, bugger off. Here's to the barkeeps and the waitresses who've been serving you your beer late. But with your noxious breath and your stupid drunken leers, be leaving all your money on the table when you go. Well, you'll have a throbbing head and nothing else to show. So bugger off, you bastards, bugger off. Bugger off,
you bastards, bugger off.
Heard of bloody swine who refuse to leave the trough. He'll get no more this evening, so you bastards bugger off. Here's to all the lovely ladies who might be waiting for the band, and thinking one of them might make a charm and one nice stand. Oh, please don't be offended, girls, the songs are meant for you, and we're happy to oblige you when this nasty job is through. Bugger off, you bastards, bugger off. Bugger off,
you bastards, bugger off.
Heard a bloody swine who refused to leave the trough. He'll get no more this evening, so you bastards bugger off. So now you're promising the ladies a night of loving bliss, when truth be told, you're far too drunk to stand up straight and piss. So give it up, your bloody socks, you'll not be getting laid. And the sooner that you're out the door, the sooner we'll be paid. Bugger off, you bastards, bugger off.
Fuck you!
Bugger off,
you bastards, bugger off.
Fuck you! Heard a bloody swine who refused to leave the trough. He'll get no more this evening, so you bastards bugger off.
Well, bugger off,
you bastards bugger off. Bugger off,
you bastards bugger off.
Take a herd of bloody swine who refused to leave the trough. He'll get no more this evening, so you bastards bugger off. He'll get no more this evening, so you bastards bugger off.
Peace and love.
And we're back. That was Erotic City by Prince. Before that was something by Blondie. Call Me, I believe. And before that was Bugger Off, an Irish drinking song. Not quite sure who played that, but I like it. So we'll have more coming up, but now it's time to return to speaking about that which concerns us. Now, what I want to do is talk a little about marketing, publishing, and then violence. They're two separate topics, but let me explain some of what we've been talking about on the forum about making a paper and putting it out. Marketers of magazines have lists of subscribers, and they sell and trade these among, and they pick up new names wherever they can. And marketers divide things into different levels of qualification. And there are two or three, and level one might be people in general who fit, you know, a demographic, say white males. Then a higher level than that might be, say, white males with an interest in politics. And a higher level than that might be white males with an interest in right-wing politics. Higher level than that might be if you were trying to sell white nationalism to these people or alert them to some kind of a white nationalist site or medium, would be white males with an interest in mud on white crime. Higher level than that would be white males with an interest in Jews and their effects on domestic and foreign policy. Now, each of those would be more closely aligned until you finally got to VNN proper. And that is your hit rate, however you want to define it, people either subscribing to your newsletter, your magazine, or people who are interested in reading your website, your hit rate is going to be higher as you get. And think of these as concentric circles, and the innermost, the bullseye, is VNN, and outside of that are people who have already expressed 0 to 100. Say there's a scale of that. Just think of how a target. It's like that. And as you get closer to the middle, you get people who are more likely to like what we're doing. Now, we want to spend our marketing effort on the people who are likeliest to come around, and we know that those are white males, and we know they're in politics, and they're right-wing politics, and they're interested in minority crime. And so when we're doing stuff like email, that's free. So free stuff is cheap. All it takes is the time of the user. He can go out and spam, as people smear it, or simply diffuse our URLs broadly. And there's no wasted money. But if we pay to print something and we aren't getting any better than the outside ring on that target, we're just hitting people we suspect might be. We don't even know for a fact they're white males. They may not even be on the target at all. We may be shooting arrows off into the bush. And that's certainly true. We are paying a premium to print this product. The internet, the beauty of it, and I come from a print publishing background, okay? I know what it's like to pony up, you know, $500 to pay the printer to print a couple thousand newsletters and then mail out, fold those up by hand and stick them in envelopes, stick stamps on the envelope, stick address labels on the envelope after printing them out, and then dragging it to the post office and mailing it. It's a very consuming process. It costs every step of the way. It costs in time, money, and wear and tear. We have something that allows global free dissemination of our information. That's called the internet. We're not making full use of it. Until we're making full use of it, or pretty close to it, there's not a whole heck of a lot of a point in ginning up money among our people to go turn it over to a printer to get a few thousands of publications that we throw out there
to what? To what kind of a response? Very little. We've gotten very little response. We can't point to anyone on our forum who has come in as a result of those papers. The only thing the papers have objectively done is gotten local media coverage. And it's kind of like throwing a stone in a pool, but more like throwing a diamond ring in a pool because it costs a lot of money. Stones are free and everywhere, and you can find them endlessly. Diamond rings are hard to come by, unless you're part of the Jewish diamond cartel. We take that diamond ring, we throw it in the lake, we get a few ripples of coverage, and then it's gone. We don't have that $5,000. So that's the cost of spending our funds on print publications. And, okay, you know, we try something new. Rounder was charged up. He wanted to begin an initiative to do it. We did it. We've now seen six or seven publications. What kind of results have we gotten? Not good enough to continue doing it. People enjoy, and they still put too much faith in. We don't really believe in our own media. We still believe in the Jews' media as the real standard. And so we enjoy pricking them and watching them get excited and hyperventilate. But we're the ones who are paying essentially $5,000 for a ticket to that show. I don't think it's worth it. I think that money ought to be hoarded up and then spent on something worthwhile. What would be worthwhile? Well, one thing that would be worthwhile is a house that had a server and had T1 service to make it harder for them to yank our ISP. What you want to do is use your money to bring you things or services that offer cumulative benefit to our cause. The paper by itself as a standalone project has no cumulative benefit to our cause. Now, if we had an organization and we had 10,000 members and they were paying regular dues and we were holding regular rallies, then it might make sense to begin to produce papers in conjunction with these rallies that could advertise what we were doing. And it might, and we had people to put them out in targeted areas and the rest. We don't have that sort of stuff available right now. So the papers are just kind of a standalone thing, and they're kind of unlinked. At least our internet stuff is all linked. So there's more sense to it. But that's the point of view in regard to the paper that I have. And the fact is, VNN costs about $1,000 a month, which is basically to have me oversee the whole operation and pay all the bills and have some kind of professional level of editing and preparing new material and what have you. And a lot of that money is simply diverted in the paper and goes to the printer. I don't get it. I got to struggle more. And yeah, I'll be frank, that is a serious problem with it. Now, if the benefit were there, I might be able to stand that, but I don't see a lasting benefit from the paper. And I really believe, a guy I used to have a fight with, but he's a critic of white nationalism, but he's an analyst also, and he said most white nationalists are driven by their internal emotional needs. They do what makes them feel good. This is what I said on the forum. What makes them feel good is poking a stick into the mass or the mainstream or the junk or the lamestream or whatever you want to call it, the Jew-controlled media, and getting their reaction. But that's a pretty damn cheap thrill. It's kind of an intellectual equivalent of carbohydrates. It doesn't do you any good. It doesn't lead to anything. It just leads to the same old round of denunciations. It's not tied into anything larger. The most it ties into is telling people to visit our website. And we haven't seen surging numbers from that. What we really need are people doing what Yankee Jim did, which is going out and posting the URL, our URLs to our best shows and to our threads discussing rallies and such, and post those on the different blogs you can find. Pick a keyword, go to Google, search under Google More Blogs, come up with all the blogs around the country that are discussing the same things we are, but not from our perspective, and post our information on them. That way we begin to draw marginal people into our ranks. Go to all the different forums for all the different shades of political opinion and post our stuff. And yeah, they'll get rid of you a lot of times, but sometimes they won't. And anyway, that's all free stuff. It doesn't cost any money. It just takes some time and some devotion from people. But that's where the actual payoff is. And for those of us running VNN, we're just trying to do as much and as high quality media content as we can. And we think that that's the way that we'll aid the cause.
I think that makes sense. And this in no way is to discourage the production of a publication. Remember that publications themselves can be done electronically. That Francis Playfair offer to turn anything that we do into a PDF, which can then be circulated. All the stuff can be done electronically. There's no reason at all not to produce a publication. I love publications. I'm a big magazine guy. I have a background in publishing stuff. I publish magazines myself. And here it's probably worthwhile to get in a little bit into how publishing actually works. Political publications don't make money. They all operate in the red. And the way that they make up their deficit and continue operating is to accept subsidies, typically from rich individuals or foundations. So that, for example, the highly influential Weekly Standard, which is edited by Jews and has an editorial line set by Jews and is one of the main pumpers of these various illegal wars, who funds that? Well, Rupert Murdoch funds it. Say he gives it, you know, $10 million a year. And out of that, they run it. But my point is that on their own, and they circulate it to the people at the highest levels of policy, which makes some sense. Right? But on their own, if they had to rely on advertising and they had to rely on subscriptions, they'd be out of business. They couldn't do it. And think about that. That's Jews who have nothing fighting against them. No one's trying to prevent them from publishing. No one's fucking with their publication at the mail, at the post office. No one's messing with anything that they're doing, and they still can't make a go of a political policy magazine, even when it's promoted by people who are talking on TV. And if they're an example of merely of the rest of it. There's no political publication in the country that is able to make money purely on advertising and on subscriptions. And what we've got is, even when I was at the Spectator, they were the same way. What they would do, I think they had maybe, often it's like 60-40. They have 60% of their revenue, of their operating budget, comes from, say, subscriptions and advertising. And they had a real, real hard time getting any kind of advertising. They had maybe 40,000 subscribers when I was there back about 89. And although they ended up eventually, at one point they grew to 400,000, and kind of the Limbaugh tide lifted the boat, but they had to make up most of what they got from Bradley, Scaife, Olin, and other foundations. Foundations which may or may not have begun as neocon foundations, but were in time taken over by Jews. You have to understand the extent to which this stuff is nattering among Jews is what is called American political discourse. It's totally dominated by Jews. They produce such an oversupply of intellectuals that there's scarcely any room for anyone else. And no one else has any kind of a network that can compete with them. So if you get in as, you know, maybe you're Dave Shiflett, who, or you're me, you know, Dave Shiflett's a Southern guy, and he's a Southern guy, a real guy, a real friendly guy, and he gets in there. Well, he doesn't have any network of real Southern people who are gonna say if he gets fired from here, they're going to give him a job over there, or they're going to let him right over here. No, you have to fit your way into the Jewish system. And you can't cause any problems for them because, hell, there's an endless supply of other people they can find who will do the same thing. And this is how it works. And so none of these political magazines make any money. The magazines that make money are going to be on sex or sports or something dumb like that. And even a lot of those have problems. So the stuff is inherently produced at a deficit, which means you're always begging for money. And we don't have foundations that are willing to fund this. If we had a foundation willing to step up and say, here's a grant of $1 million, and I want you to put out a monthly newspaper or something like that, we could do it then and have money left over. But the way it is now, I mean, we take that money and we have to raise it ourselves each time. There's not a demand pull for it, and we just haven't seen much of a response from it. So why not develop a good team of people to put one together and make it electronic and have other people who are willing to go out electronically and post this around the net at different blogs, get something really, really good, and then start seeing if we can develop some kind of a subscription based off that. I mean, this stuff can all be sold electronically, too. See what kind of interest there is. I mean, right now we don't have the stuff in place to do what people want, so it really is. It's like taking a diamond and throwing it into a lake. That's a little bit of the truth about how publishing works. And now
I'm going to play one song, and then I'm going to talk a little bit about violence. Maybe I'll play another song. Oh, I played that Prince song just to piss you off. See if anybody's listening. So let me know if it pissed you off or if anybody was listening. Here's a nice one, I think.
I would have given you all of my heart, but that someone is torn it apart, and she's taken almost all that I've got. But if you want, I'll try to love again. Baby, I'll try to love again, but I know.
The first cut is the deepest. Baby, I know. The first cut is the deepest. 'Cause when it comes to being lucky, she's cursed. When it comes to loving me, she's worse. Baby, I'll try to love again, but I know. The first cut is the deepest. Baby, I know. The first cut is the deepest. 'Cause when it comes to being lucky, she's cursed. When it comes to loving me, she's worse.
Good stuff. All right, that was Cat Steven with The First Cut is the Deepest. You've probably heard that before, but you heard a cover of it. I'm assuming he wrote that since he wrote a lot of songs. I like it. I don't even know if he's white or not. He may be off-white. He may be a crew, but still a good song. Now, let's see. What was I going to talk? Oh, yeah. I was going to talk about violence. Now, I got up today and I looked over the forum and there was a bunch going on about R. James and whether he's a provocateur, etc., etc. I want to clear some stuff up about the law and violence. There is nothing wrong or illegal about discussing violence or illegal activities. You're perfectly free to discuss stuff as long as it's theoretical, hypothetical, and you are not directing your violence at a specific individual. So all these anonymous or pseudonymous monkeys who think they figured out who's a provocateur, you're not smart enough to. That's simple. Point one. Point two, how does our government act? Tim McVeigh used to say the government is a great teacher, and the people learn from it one way or another. And what he learned was that, what have I been doing out here? He was in Gulf War One, blowing people's heads off from a mile away. But at the end of the day, he came around to think, what am I doing? Whose interests am I really serving here? And he became a fan of the Turner Diaries
But I say, incidentally and parenthetically, that was not what motivated him. Tim McVeigh said that he was motivated by what the government did to American citizens at Waco, which was lie about them, attack them, and burn them to death. And that's what our government does. And you want to fight that government system through the courts? Where do the judges in the courts come from? Why, they come from law schools. Who runs the law schools? Well, look at the top law schools. Harvard, Yale, Bolt at Berkeley, Michigan, Pennsylvania. Who runs these? Who are the professors? Who are the deans? The deans are Jews, and 50%, and never under a third of the law professors at the top law schools that set the tone for the rest. Never under a third of the professors are Jews. These are left-wing, social justice, communist Jews. Read communist for that. Jews who hate white males. These are the people who mint the new lawyers, who become the judges, who become the political appointees. These are the ones who make the decisions. They are not going to decide justly where there's any political aspect involved in what's going on. And so you take a government that's illegal and that has its own biased party people running the law courts, what recourse do you have? I'm fond of quoting the John F. Kennedy statement that those who make peaceful change impossible make violent revolution inevitable. So I think that there's a third point, which is, as Pierce used to say, the media, the cops, the government like to talk as though actions that are actually legal are illegal because they want to make them illegal. And it's easier to make things illegal if people already think they are illegal. And so it was whenever NA flyers would be distributed, you'd have the cop become an instant expert on the First Amendment. And sometimes they'd back up that it's legal to do it, but almost always they would come out with some kind of prejudicial statement of precisely the type I spoke against in Knoxville and in Kalamazoo. We don't want them here. If you want to undermine their activity, you have people who are there to enforce the law, making prejudicial statements about legal activities under the law. That ain't the way you act. That's not what you're charged to do. And so part of this prejudice between the cops and the media is to pretend that anybody who throws out flyers with information the Jews don't want you to know is a hater and an extremist and engaged in hate speech rather than protected political speech. Free speech means political speech. It doesn't mean pornography. It doesn't mean what people think it means. The Jews have so perverted the public understanding to think that free speech means pornography or anything in a Judeo-corporate safe direction. But it doesn't mean that. Free speech refers specifically to political speech. It means that you can criticize the authorities. That's the function the newspapers in theory perform, but in practice they are on the same side as the oppressors. The newspapers, the police, and the politicians are part of the same smooth-functioning tyranny. A tyranny run by Jews, and what the Jews have done is create a cult for white people called liberalism, and this cult is spread over television. And every weeknight, the telecult gathers in front of the nasty purple stream, is bathed in these purple lies. Too bad Prince didn't write a song about it. I would have played it. It would have been more apropos, perhaps, than Erotic City. It would have been called Sick Purple Bath. Side thought, anyway. So the government that uses illegal activity to further its own end, as our government does, can have no complaint when illegal activities are used against it. And it is worth our time to explore in fiction and in discussions on forums where illegal activity might further our cause. And our James has done that, and he's done that in a responsible way. He's talked about stuff. He hasn't urged people to do anything such as kill a specific individual, that's illegal.
But what he has done is talk about the kinds of things that can be done illegally that will help the white cause. And they are precisely the kinds of things that the Jews are doing today against white people. Now, the Jews don't need to go illegal a lot of times because they have the mechanism of power, which is the mass media and other things. They can criminalize stuff they don't like. They can browbeat it to where it has little chance to resist. But we have the odds against us. We white males, failed to perceive the Jews as the enemy. We allowed them into our country on individual terms, taking them one at a time, which is a grave mistake. It's a vital mistake. They, in turn, once they took that power, did what they could to eliminate our using it against them, so that every single time you find some kind of assault on the remaining freedoms we do have, First and Second Amendment, always Jews are at the forefront of attempting to repeal the freedoms that our ancestors secured in the Bill of Rights. Free speech, free guns. You need a gun to defend yourself. You need full, unrestrained use of the language to describe what is happening, which with Aryans is the same thing as defending ourselves. With Jews, the free description of their behavior is anti-Semitism, because what they're doing is so nasty, vile, and antithetical to the interests of all other living organisms. Perforce, free speech threatens Jews. Therefore, Jews threaten free speech. Pause so that can sink in. So, I have no trouble with people on the forum or anywhere discussing in measured tones and carefully chosen words the use of illegal, violent tactics to further our cause. No more than I have any trouble with people using the forum to discuss Zog's illegal activities to further its cause, such as the lies it spread about Iraq before attacking it, the result of the bombings, the illegal bombings it made of Iraq to destroy it. We talk about that. I have to talk about ways to fight back. It's purely legal. There's nothing wrong with it and everything good about it. That said, we don't break the law and we don't encourage the murder of specific individuals. But what we do is we point out the individuals who together form what we call the Jewish tyranny that does in fact dominate America through the government and through the media, and does in fact result in people getting beaten up and killed. The same government that in Knoxville says, "I assaulted the cops." Well, that's how the cops wrote it up. That's when I'm forced to come up with a couple $1,000s to defend myself from. That's what the media, who have the same agenda as the cops, repeat. That's what the big Jews running the country use in their summary of my character. But that's not what actually happened. The cop assaulted me. You understand? So, a system that treats ordinary whites, like you listening to this, as third-class citizens, and basically it treats you as tax slaves, tax vegetables. You're not to have any say in anything that affects your own life. You're just to turn over your tax money and to repeat the reigning shibboleths of the master class. You needn't have any particular respect for their system when they clearly had no respect for yours when they took it over. And they have no respect for you whatsoever. You are something to be used and discarded by them like any other consumable. And that's how the system is right now. Now, what I'm going to do is play one or two songs, and then when we come back, and I'm getting excited just thinking about it. We're going to talk about political correctness, which is Semitical correctness, which is communism, which is Judaism. Say me and Rabbi Wise, Stephen Wise. We are going to talk about the demonization of the white male, the person this broadcast is directed to. And we're going to talk about what Jewish control means and how it is manifested through the media, just like we have been doing. But first of all, let's listen to... I'm going to play some interesting little stuff you probably haven't heard before. So now, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to play three songs. That'll probably take us to about 3:25. And then we'll talk for the rest of the time about Marxism, multiculturalism, and free speech. So, are you ready? Here we go.
Trouble with the heart. button on the bow, and here we go.
Oh, tell me, will you, darling, why you look so bad tonight? There's bags around your eyeballs, which is red instead of white.
Well, if for this way you came when I was alone, shucks, I should have known that you was temptation. You smiled a leer me on, my heart is plumb gone, cause you was temptation. It'd be thrilling if and you're willing, but if and it never can be, then pity for me, for you was too bored to be kissed. I couldn't resist, cause you was temptation, and I was yours.
A mud hole tips a mosquito, darling.
That's how you tempted me.
And as corn liquor tips a drunkard, as sorghum tempts a bee, as a willow tree tips a caterpillar, darling.
That's how you tempted me. You came when I was alone. Shucks, I should have known that you was temptation. You smiled a little neon. My heart is plumb gone, cause you was temptation. Be thrilling if and you're willing, but if and it never can be, then pity for me, cause you was too bored to be kissed. I couldn't resist, cause you was temptation, and I was yours. Here's my heart, take it away. Yes, take it away and say that we will never, never, never part. I'm just a slave, just a bad burned slave. I'm a
you.
dug that. I sure liked it myself. That's why I chose it. What was it? That was, which just concluded, Punk Rock Girl by Dead Milkmen. Preceding that immediately was Temptation by Cinderella Stump. Before that was a song you probably heard. AC/DC, Dirty Deeds Done Dirt Cheap. And that will conclude the musical part of the first half of the 3 o'clock hour. And now we're going to get into some good stuff. That would be Marxism, Multiculturalism, and Free Speech by Frank Ellis, formerly of Leeds, until he was chased out by agents of the same cause he analyzes and critiques. That is, communists and the Jews they wrote in on. Chapter 4. I'm going to read and comment on this, and we just have a few pages here, but it's chock full of good stuff. I think you're going to agree. And let's see. From communism's enemy of the people to PC's hate criminal. Think about that. Communism had enemies of the people. What did they do to those enemies of the people? They tried to get them to recant. They held show trials, and then after the show trials, they executed them. What do we do in PC world? Do we ever see people forced to recant for expressing perfectly reasonable views? I think you know the answer is yes. We see that all the time. Remember the DJ down in St. Louis who, in a slip of the tongue, he was actually praising Condoleezza Rice, and I can't remember what he said, but he was fired within the day, and he had joined the NAACP by the next day and apologized profusely for a slip of the tongue in praising a black. It's like in Stalin's era when they were afraid to be the first one to stop applauding because they might get shot for showing insufficient regard for the ultimate leader. Are we like them? Well, you don't quite take people out and shoot them. We do it with their character. We deprive them of their livelihood and of social respect if they don't toe the PC, which is the SC line. Now let's look at the text. Communists, taking their lead from Lenin, expended vast amounts of energy attacking and damning ideological opponents. Now think about our own media. You should think about, while he's talking about Lenin and the communists, you think about that in relation to what you see around you in the so-called mass media. Western capitalist states were the main external target. Internally, the enemy varied according to the party's goals. Peasants or kulaks during the terror famine, or bigger fish during the Great Terror. Now, kulaks were rich peasants in the Ukraine and other states, and they were class enemies, and they were slaughtered by starvation or just by being shot by the NKVD, the political police of the Soviet Union, and the political police were dominated by Jews. Jews ran it and fleshed out most of the upper ranks. But when you attribute to them their own behavior, there's no people on earth that is as ashamed of its own behavior as the Jews are. That's why they continually misrepresent what they did, and usually they claim to have done the opposite of what they actually did. So Hitler was fighting the people who murdered the kulaks. He was fighting the people who came up with the worst system in the history of mankind. He was opposing its carriers. He fought them very successfully. That is why Hitler is demonized. As a collection of wealthy and powerful states, and despite the best efforts of fellow travelers, the West was in a position to counter Soviet attacks by highlighting the huge discrepancies between Communist Party propaganda and the grim realities of Soviet life. Now, you have to realize, Ellis is in some degree either afraid or a little bit, I don't think he's afraid, but he's a little naive about the Jewish operation of the West as well as the East. remember that communism came out of Jews. The Jews came out of the Lower East Side of New York. And the Jew rabble, the rabble-rousers, were Lenin, and they were fed by funds from Jewish financiers. Some of the robber barons of American capitalism, they fed the funds to Lenin. They paid him and his revolutionaries to go in there and take power in Russia and kill off the people they hated, the white Russians and the old aristocracy. Of course, they did it in the name of the peasants and the workers. But what it amounted to was a bunch of Jewish gangsters taking control of Russia and using their control to murder tens of millions of people. And those people were whites and Christians. It wasn't Jews getting murdered by Russia. It wasn't Jews being murdered by the Soviet Union. It was Jews doing the murders. Jews were the executioners. Jews were the coiners of smears. Jews were the shooters of bullets. Jews were the bad guys, and so it is in America today. The neocons running America are the same thing as the commies who ran the Soviet Union. They're blood relatives of one another. They're the same class of people ruling over the same class of people. Both cases, Jews are running these countries in the interest of Jews and murdering whites because they don't like us. They see us as threats. Inside the Soviet Union, the struggle against the class enemy or enemy of the people was conducted in a far more one-sided manner, given that the state enjoyed a total monopoly in the dissemination of ideas and information. Do you see a parallel to America? If Letalvis and Lamarcus or Lamarcus rape and murder Chris and Shannon, and we complain about it, how are we described in the media? And if they're media, why aren't there also... medium is singular. Media is plural. If there are media, and if we have a free press, if the media are free to say what they want, if they have political free speech, why do they always use precisely the same terms? Why do they always call us haters and extremists for talking about the victims of gunpoint integration? Well, the answer is that, in fact, there is no diversity and freedom in the media. There's uniformity. Because all the media are owned by the same people. And even if they're not literally owned by it, in 10% of the cases, they're staffed at the upper levels by people who all think the same way, have long since achieved and consolidated hold over the journalism schools as they have the law schools. And they see that the laws and the media all point in the same direction. They demonize the white male, who is the enemy of the Jew. It's even visible in Hollywood movies, where you never see tall blondes cast as heroes, but always as the bad guys. The good guys are these little, wispy little dark-haired Jews who are teaming up with the Aryan maidens. Say Drew Barrymore, the blonde Aryan maiden, teaming up with Adam Sandler, the Jew. Wouldn't she more naturally want to team up with a big, tall, good-looking blonde white guy? Well, of course she would. But in the movies, it's always the dark little runty Jew who gets the girl. The blonde guy, take Rutger Hauer, is always and only the bad guy. Think about that. So all these media and all these laws point in one direction in America, just as it was in the Soviet Union. That's a sign that there's some kind of control. I got someone at the door. Just a second. Well, that was an interruption by a Chinese seeking the Chinese girl next door who goes to TSU. So, sometimes we're interrupted by the third world, but you understand how it is in America today. Alright, picking up where I was, where I left off. And to be targeted as a dissenter in the Soviet Union could mean anything from harsh social ostracism and self-criticism at work to arrest and execution. So now again, consider this in terms of America today versus Soviet Union yesterday. To be targeted as a dissenter in America could mean anything from harsh social ostracism and self-criticism at work to arrest and execution. Can you be arrested today if you dissent? Will you be socially ostracized? Will you be executed? No, you probably won't be executed, although there are circumstances in which you can be indirectly executed because the cops and the media simply won't will stand by and wink, as, for example, in the L.A. riots, where they don't go in and stop the riot. They allow the niggers to kill several dozen whites. Well, the whites weren't technically dissenters, but then again, it's the media who's pumping up, who's putting the chip on the shoulder of the blacks and telling them that whites are responsible for their problems. And then when those blacks are actuated by whatever sets them into their chimp off, they throw a ring around the circus and let them proceed to kill the whites. I mean, it's kind of the same thing. It's the same thing once removed. As for social ostracism, it's self-evident there's social ostracism of people who hold views that are against the agenda pursued by the media and the rulers of society. Self-criticism at work and execution, well, we do have people who recant, and that's reported. Now, let's see. What's clear here is that we're going along the same track as what they established in the Soviet Union, and for the same reason. It's because the country, America today, which we call Ameriqua, is run by the same type of people who set up the Soviet Union, i.e. Jewish communist gangsters. You'll never see it written that way in the books. And the conservatives will complain about communists, but what the conservatives do, being Jew lackeys, being bought out and controlled by the Jews, what they will do is, oh, they weren't Jew, they were atheists. Well, you can be an atheist and a Jew. Most Jews are. Most Jews are atheists. So it's just another way for conservatives who are cowards to avoid discussing the roots of the problem, which means avoiding having to do anything about it. And the Jews run the entertainment circus for the idiot conservatives on Fox Channel, and they're happy to sacrifice, or at least you can't tell if they're not happy, happy to sacrifice their sons and daughters and open their country to the third world. And none of the conservative talking heads, someone who's on opposite me right now, say Rush Limbaugh, will ever tell you that Jews are behind the open borders, just as Jews are behind the war against Iraq, just as Jews are the ones who created the lies that led to that war. You have to understand the Jewish root of this. Until you understand who's really running things and what they're doing and why they're doing it, you don't understand the first thing about politics in the West. It's no accident that at the same time in all these Western lands they reverse their immigration policies from white Australia to yellow Australia, from European immigration into America to non-white immigration into America. We do not even have equal rights on our own land. We are despised, a member of a despised race that is discriminated against by law, even while the Jews and the media are talking about institutional racism and meaning discrimination against blacks. The laws overtly favor blacks and favor other minorities, so-called minorities that constitute 82% of the world, or I'm sorry, 92% of the world. Only 8% of the world is white. We are the minority, and we are a minority that is global, and we have interests as a global minority. And we all face exactly the same problem in these different lands. It's always Jews operating the media for their own interests. And that's something we have to understand. Now, let's return to the text. The enemy of the people was an essential construct in all the party's media campaigns. During Stalin's Great Terror, the Soviet people were told that many of the Bolsheviks who had made the revolution with Lenin and Stalin were in fact Western agents of one kind or another. Or worse still, that they were in secret contact with the great Satan, Trotsky. In his Chinese variant, communist thugs rooted out, quote, enemies of the people during Mao's Red Terror, compelling innocent people to admit to a whole range of bizarre, ideologically motivated, politically incorrect crimes. And as I've said on the other two shows in which we discussed this PC stuff, the Chinese actually, and that's something I know less about than the Soviet Union, provide some even perhaps the very best examples ever, maybe apart from North Korea, of just this insanity of these gooks taking this PC stuff literally and really, I mean almost literally, like opening up their heads and trying to reconstruct their brains. So, compelling innocent people to admit to a whole range of bizarre, ideologically motivated, politically incorrect crimes. And think about this again. I mean, think about this in relation to if there's only one America, always compare what happened in the Soviet Union to what happens today. That's the value of history. And what do we see today in, say, education? We see, oh, there's a gap between races. And since you have to concede that the media are controlled by some party, because they never talk about, well, maybe the gap is biological and there's nothing can be done about it. It's always, no, we must surge forward with our five-year plan to eliminate the racial IQ and test score gap.
What if that can't be done? What if it's not doable? I am from the government. I didn't say we could help you. I didn't say we couldn't hurt you.
Now, never, ever in our free media do we ever see discussed even the possibility that the gap... You know, it really is. It's like saying, you know, turtles... There's a gap in speed between turtles and cheetahs. How are we going to close that gap? Maybe if we send the turtles to running school with the cheetahs, that will solve the problem. We sit a whole bunch of tortoises down next to these cheetahs, and, you know, in a couple of years, I think we should see their 100-meter dash time start to drop. Pretty soon it will close. I mean, that is exactly analogous to sticking niggers among whites and expecting it's going to change their biological ability to think and learn. It won't. All it will do is drag down the whites. Shouldn't we be concerned about white kids' education? Well, no, we can't, because whites are only allowed to exist as individuals and as a collective negative that bears historical responsibility for whatever the Jews feel like blaming them for, whether it's bogus atrocities against Jew or bogus atrocities against blacks. So I'm encouraging you whites to reclaim positive identity. Be proud of being white. They teach these little kids, whites have no culture, only Indians and niggers and Jews have culture, but we don't. Well, if you want to know what white culture is, just pull up your window shade and look out the window. Everything that you see that isn't grass is white culture. Back to the text. Political correctness, which became an issue in the West at the start of the 1990s, I don't know about that. I remember it being talked about in the 80s. Not the late 80s either, the earlier 80s. Originated in the Soviet Union, undergoing the various mutations on the way from Moscow to Peking to the West universities, and final modification by the New Left, and that would be in the 60s. One key difference between the old and the New Left was that whereas the old left concentrated on the means of production, that is the giant factories and stuff, the New Left abandoned heavy industry, as it were, and set about seizing control of the means of expression. Ah, the rise of the media and the political power that came with the ownership of these incredibly powerful new mass mediums, mass media such as radio and TV in particular. In the post-industrial society, this gives the New Left real power and influence way beyond its size. Think about that. TV, does TV promote homosexuality? Or is it opposed to it? Well, it promotes it. What percentage of the population are homosexuals? 2%? How does a 2% minority, Jews or fags, how do they dominate the other 98%? Well, they have to have some kind of leverage. They have to have some kind of way of focusing the group mind on them and listening to their agenda, and they have to have some way of punishing anyone who might go against it. Jews are the only people who own the media, or have to. As a brilliant man once said, and I believe that brilliant man was me in yesterday. Let's see. And it is a great line. And it's also a line that's twisted. And this is the way, I say this as a side note, the most genuine originality is a twist of something earlier or reapplication. Oscar Wilde used to talk about fresh departures for thought. And that's what it is. Twain said, man is the only animal that blushes, dash, or needs to. So then I think about that, I like it. Oh, that's a good line. Good line. And I think about, how can that be reapplied? You know, Jews are the only people who control the media, or need to, right? How come the Amish don't control the media? Let's look at it this way. Jews are a 2% minority. Amish are not even a 1% minority. I mean, why don't the Amish control the media? Leave out the religion and the rest of it. Let's say the Amish had no problem with electricity. What would we call them? We'd call them Mennonites. There's a word for people like that. We call them Mennonites. And not because they're devoted to a particular kind of deodorant. My point is, let's say that the Amish did what they do, but they allowed electricity. They had no problem with electricity. So if you take the Amish and the Jews, they're both itty-bitty minorities, but the Jews control the media and the Amish don't. Why would the Jews need to control the media? Or can you find any group interest in controlling the media on the part of the Jews compared to the Amish? Well, you only need to control the media if your agenda runs counter to the interests of the people who otherwise wouldn't go along with you. Now, that describes the Jews precisely. The Amish ask only that they be left alone. They're wholly self-sufficient in their own communities because they're not trying to rip other people off. And indeed, they only interact with them to sell them stuff or to provide them with services. They don't need to control the media and redefine themselves. But if you're a scamster, if you're a con man, then you have to get control of that media. And if you have an agenda that you can only carry out because you're not self-sufficient, you're a middleman, parasite-type people, if you have an agenda that requires the participation of others, and if getting those others to go along essentially means fooling them, then you have to control the media. So if the Jew says, you know what, Saddam Hussein poses a potential threat to Israel, we need to get rid of him, but we don't have, it's not really in our interest to try to do that directly using Jew soldiers from Israel, let's see if we can get America to do it. What do they got to do? They got to control the media. And then they can put on their people making their case and not allowing any competition and setting up false debates between Jew A and Jew B as though they represent the spectrum of opinion. And in that way, you pull the wool over the eyes of the Goyish sheep. So they don't understand what's going on. They don't understand what's in their true interest. And that way you get the majority to do what's in the interest of the minority. And that is precisely what's going on in America today. And so back to the text. So he's talking about they move from, you know, oh, we control the steel mills. Well, screw the steel mills. Let's control the newspapers. Let's control this new television. Remember that television was invented by a goy, actually a white Mormon teenager, thought of it while he was out farming his father's land. Idea occurred to him. Whites are geniuses like that. All the Jews did was rip off the technology as soon as it appeared. So he's saying control the media. In the post-industrial society, this gives the new left real power and influence way beyond its size. One thing that both variants of the left retain, though, is the carefully constructed hate figure. For the old left, it would have been the capitalist and his bourgeois lackeys who appeared in the grotesque caricature in Pravda cartoons. Two important hate figures for the new left are patriarchy and the white, heterosexual, middle-class male. Patriarchy occupies center stage in feminist demonology. And for multiculturalism, the hate criminal and the enemy of the people is the white, heterosexual, middle-class male. Where would you look for proof of this assertion? You have to look no farther than the television, which broadcasts for the telecult. What do we see in the telecult? We see white males demonized in every ad that is not a direct solicitation to join the army and kill people for Israel. Whites are absolutely demonized as doofy and goofy. And to this end, we got a rather astonishing response on Kirksville Today. Allow me to dig it up here just a second. And you know I spend a lot of time at Kirksville Today, not just trying to persuade local white teens not to join the military, but to stay away from niggers and Mexicans because they mean nothing but ill. And I got this letter from someone, losergirl215 at lose.com. And she signed the letter, Loser Girl. This is her letter. Cavill said, Cavill's me, quote, white girls who mix with niggers or Mexicans end up hurt every single time. And then she says, now listen to this, but that's reality. We want fantasy. We want Cosby and diversity is our greatest strength and all those smart, funny, noble persons of color that we see on TV. TV is our friend. It makes us feel smart. You make us feel dumb. You're no fun, Cavill. Bet you also say 2 plus 2 equals 4 and eat your spinach and stuff like that.
Well, my response to your bad vibes is love, love, love. So fuck off, loser girl. Isn't that interesting?
So these girls, at some deep level, know that Mexes and niggers are bad for them, but they provide some temporary, short-term fun. So they have the fun, and then we pay for the consequences, which is usually some kind of nasty, stupid, low IQ mulatto. I'm trying here to okay. I'm sorry, I heard a noise and I was wondering if it popped up in the broadcast, and Bud had trained me before to turn it off, but I only did it one time and I'm checking it now. I'm hoping that it didn't sound then. I don't think it did actually. But I always listen to these afterwards so I can improve what I'm doing, so hopefully that didn't show. But isn't that an incredible letter? It basically confirmed everything that we're saying, that these girls at some level, they know that mixing with niggers and them it's not helping them, it's hurting them, but they can't resist it. They don't have the character or the will to resist what they know is bad for them. So they go have fun with niggers for a few years, and then either if they get out of it alive, they try to find a white guy, or more likely than not, they're burdened with nigglets and mexlets, and they're a drain on the social system. And that's kind of a sad thing, but that's the power. That's the power the media has, getting back to the text, to demonize white males and make them appear unattractive even in the eyes of their own women. So they get white men into the army under false pretexts. And they get them off over there fighting and dying while the white girls are here partying with the niggers and the Mexicans. Is that insane? Of course it's insane. And it all happened because white males failed to identify Jews as the enemy. Jews are the other, they are alien, they are hostile, and they are a group, and they are opposed to our interest, and they fight us as a team. And their best tactic is to prevent us from seeing that we are a group opposed to them. So we are only to be individuals, but they're perfectly fine to have Jewish pride and be a team and fight the world that hates them so much, they claim. So everything they say is a lie. Everything they say is the opposite of the truth. Now, let's go back to the text. So the point here is to recapitulate, and I like to recapitulate about every two sentences so that you understand what we're talking about, really truly understand it. So his point here is he's contrasting the new left and the old left. The old left wanted, let's take over the steel mills, the means of productions, and own all the big factories and control society that way. Well, that was fine, you know. And remember, the world, i.e. the white world, only got mechanized after, you know, 1840, maybe in Britain, and 1860, maybe in Germany. So you didn't even have anything really before then. It was all agricultural for the most part. So big heavy industry dominates up into the early decades of the 20th century, and then the mass media kick in, and everything really takes off, and it becomes apparent that a better lever for control is not owning the steel mills, but it's owning the New York Times. It's owning ABC, CBS, NBC, all of which are owned by Jews in the first half of the 20th century. A couple of them still are. I don't think NBC may be owned by GE, but the people determining its news and its upper-level entertainment executives are all Jews or fags. So it's dominated by the same type. It's like saying, you know, Rupert Murdoch isn't a Jew, although that's up for debate, since a lot of people think his mom is. It can't be established, but he's still the upper. He's totally Zionist, and the upper ranks are completely filled with Jews, bent on expanding Israel, creating greater Israel. So, back to the text. Multiculturalism is a cult and an article one of the cult. I'm sorry. Multiculturalism is a cult, and article one of the cult is that all evil in the world arises from the white male and his civilization. His being heterosexual is in itself oppression, since the society he has constructed has marginalized and punished homosexuals and women, and, moreover, on the basis of the thoroughly erroneous belief that sex and sex differences are biologically and genetically determined, whereas they are, as every enlightened member of the cult knows, socially and politically constructed. So again, you see the leftist claim that they can trump reality with their politics, and the white males who obeyed objective reality and in so doing mastered the world to the extent of creating all civilization heretofore known outside of a couple of crappy stone temples in Angkor Wat or whatever in Cambodia, they hate that. So, for your good deeds, you're punished. The Jew punishes the more attractive, higher intelligence white by essentially claiming that everything he did was really built on the backs of niggers and Mexicans and every other minority and women and fags. So he's isolated. This is an Alinsky, a Jew radical, to isolate them, demonize them, destroy them. Hillary Clinton has deliberately said, yeah, that's my politics. Isolate, demonize, and destroy. Saul Alinsky, Jew radical in the 60s. But this is the way the communists operate. And what they've done is isolate white males, and they've tried to split them apart from every other group and say, you're only okay, only acceptable status for a white male is to be a fag. Only if you're homosexual will we tolerate you. Otherwise, we will smear and demonize and destroy you and discriminate against you legally while claiming you're oppressing us. And I've got Everclear singing about it. I think it is the white men in the black suits who are the oppressing power. Nobody ever sings about Jews being the oppressing power. Jews are the ones who control the music industry. Jews, we played earlier Fight the Power. Where do you think that comes from? How much do you bet that wasn't a Jew group that promoted that and produced it? Encouraging blacks to fight the power, which they define as the white male they hate, when actually Jews are the ones producing the rap. They're the ones manipulating blacks into hating whites when whites have nothing to do with blacks' conditions. If anything, Jews do. Jews brought them over here in their ships. Jews sell them liquor in the ghetto. Jews created all the housing and all the welfare incentives that allow them to live without working. Jews sick them on Whitey in the school and tell them they're equal. Jews are evil embodied in a people. Any settled, happy situation can be upset with the addition of just a handful of Jews. They're very destructive, malign, envious, vicious, nasty. Just nasty. Nasty people. And we're better off shed of them. And he goes on, nor is his middle class status, the white male, something that he earned. It is secured and maintained through exploitation. So, you know, guys like Edison, who sat there at the workbench and figured out 10,000 ways that something doesn't work, and then finally on the 10,001st found something that did, which was stolen approximately 3 to 5 seconds later by some Jew who wanted to use the latest electrical gear to produce pornography and other social solvents, they don't even give us credit for our own achievements. Everything we did was from exploiting others. You know how we ruthlessly exploited the intelligence of the Negro. Is that funny? A little bit? I hope. We exploited the manual labor of the Jew. We forced them to get out there and push man plows. We're being hated for our virtues. That's the bottom line there. They hate us because we're better than they are. And if you don't think that that's how people work, you need to read a little more Twain. He said something like, the difference between a man and a dog is if you help the dog, it won't bite you. No good deed goes unpunished, as they say. We are hated for our virtues. We're hated for our superior looks. We're hated for our superior brains. We're hated for the superior beauty and order we brought to our society. Who ever heard of a Jewish artist painting something worth looking at? Who ever heard of an unsubsidized Jewish sculptor who painted something that anyone would have wanted other than the government, who crafted something that people would have looked at of their own accord? That is, whoever heard of a Jew creating a sculpture that someone wanted to examine or go visit a gallery and see? No, no one. Jewish art has always been funded by the government, a government controlled by Jews and leftists that doles out money to its own to entrench its political power and degrade society through the spreading of ugliness, which is practically, I mean, that's almost a definition of what Jews do. Is they spread ugliness. They spread rancor. They divide and conquer. You find that Jew Steinlein even openly saying that. They say it so openly in the Jewish publications. They don't care if you read. They think they can prevent you from organizing to thwart them. I'm going to run a little bit long. I know I said I'd cut off at 4, but I find I have a little more time. I do have a couple things I need to do, so I won't run too long. But this stuff is more important than anything else you'll probably hear today. Unless your boyfriend's going to propose to you. Before 1991, the victims would have been that trusty stalwart, the working class. Today, the new victims are women and racial ethnic minorities. The ideological construct of the white, heterosexual, middle-class male embodies multiculturalism's unholy trinity of damnation, homophobia, sexism, and racism. Xenophobia, a subgenre of racism, can be added for good measure. So what he's saying is they went from steel mills to media, and they went from class, from working class, to minorities. So from class to race. From steel to media, from class to race. But the bad guys remain more or less the same. It's kind of a slight shift in focus, or a slight... They found a new and improved way of demonizing the people they want to destroy, who are Aryan aristocracy. What Jews always want to do is decapitate their competitors, and whites are their foremost competitors, white Aryans. So that explains their hostility. Their hostility is not to Christianity, it's toward the Aryan, that it's an Aryan church. Sexism, that is discrimination against women, is quite rational and desirable in a number of occupations. Certain military tasks are totally unsuited to women. That a statistically insignificant number of women may be able to perform on equal terms with some men is not an argument in favor of destroying the distinct and tested male ethos of the military in order to satisfy the demands of feminists. As far as multiculturalists are concerned, racism is everywhere in Western society, another reason why it must be broken and remade. We can find unwitting racism, cultural racism, or he says the forms and definitions of racism are just as diverse. We can find unwitting racism, cultural racism, institutional racism, covert racism, overt racism, and intellectual racism. One of the curiosities of racism is that only whites seem to be guilty thereof. Everyone else is a victim. All right, that'll conclude with the text for today. I'll make a couple points about that, then I'm going to play a couple songs, and maybe I'll let the playlist run a little bit as a conclusion of the show. But his point there is that they're setting group against group, and what they have to do with blacks is lie that they do the same thing with blacks and women. They tell them that white males are oppressing them. White males are responsible for your problems. Then they redo the laws so that niggers can get away with murder, whereas whites can't even get away with heated words or bar brawls or anything. That's what hate crime is. It's penalizing white males for the little tiny bit of crime they commit and allowing minorities to get away scot-free even when they commit the most vicious crimes. We mentioned earlier that the Simon Wiesenthal Center saw to it that three of the mob of blacks who attacked white women in Long Beach and left them seriously wounded were turned over to Simon Wiesenthal Center to be trained in tolerance at a cost of $30,000 apiece to the LA taxpayers. And that's what those kids got for basically costing one woman her eye and mashing her head up. Whereas if a white gets in a bar brawl like Sean Walker, he goes to jail for 7 years. This is what happens when you allow Jewish communists, communist Jews, to run your nation. You get shunted down to the third class level. It's a steerage. You're in the hold of the ship. You're down where the niggers were that the Jews brought over here and later used to wreck our nation. And stuff with women, I don't think we need to go into that right now. We'll do that next time. We still have more of Chapter 4 left to discuss, and we will discuss it next week. I may be out Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday. It just depends. But I'm going to be doing, this is my third show this week. I'm going to be doing the show at least, say, 3 times a week. And I may even do it in the middle of the night. And we will take calls on some of these. I had some advice from Dietrich on how to avoid the technical problems that cropped up when we had Andrei Kievsky call yesterday. But on the whole, it's going to be mostly me talking and playing some music. And let's see, I think I may play the song I played for you before that I really like. This is by, where is it? I don't know if I see it here. I know it's on here. It's a good ending song, if it's on. Let's see. And I want to remind you again that Bud White is going to be on tonight, as he is every Friday night, at 9 o'clock Eastern. Now, the song I'm going to leave you with is called I'm Happy Every Day I Live by Miss Marianne and the Ragtime Wranglers. And I like the song. It's pretty much how I feel about life. I'm angry about a lot of things, but I'm basically happy. Just born that way and decided to be that way. And I think everyone can be like that. You do have sort of a nature, it may seem sometimes, but basically, I agree with what Lincoln said. You're about as happy as you make up your mind to be. Everyone's got problems. That's another good line that I've told people. Not my line, but a good line. Tell people your problems. 80% of them don't care about your problems, and the other 20% are glad you have them. Good afternoon. I'll see you a couple days.
I got the world by the tail and a rainbow around my shoulder. I'm happy. Shine. I even know my face is fine and I'm happy. job I hate, trying to do something.